It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, my guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston, a longtime reporter for the New York Times, also former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors. He teaches now at Syracuse University College of Law. His new book, The Making of Donald Trump. It culminates some 30 years of reporting on the media mogul and TV reality star turned presidential candidate. In the book, Johnston details the origin of the Trump family's real estate fortune, Trump's own business empire, as well as his education, his early career, and of course, his whirlwind presidential bid. And David K. Johnston joins us from New York City live this hour. Welcome to the program. So good to have you on.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
It's so important. I felt reading this book, the context to the daily reports about the doings and sayings of Donald Trump, you can really understand them when you read this book, understand the context of his words and actions and how Donald Trump became the man he is today. We want to reach out to our listeners as well to ask you during this hour, please get in touch with us with your questions about the life and work of Donald Trump. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find us, Iowa Public Radio, on Facebook. Let's start with some of that context going back that we don't hear much about, if anything, in the news. Tell us about Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, and how he learned much of his trade from his father. What sort of man was he?
Well, Donald Trump's father, his father, who made his fortune running whorehouses, his father died when he was a boy. When he was 15 years old, he started a business. He was a very industrious guy. His mother had to sign the contracts and everything, so the business was called Elizabeth Christ and Son. And he built garages in Brooklyn and Queens for these newfangled things in the 1920s called automobiles. Later, he started one of the first self-service grocery stores, which he quickly sold for a big profit. And he built housing for shipyard workers during World War II and is said to have been the first man in line to get FHA financing for the housing the government helped build for workers after the war. He also had a business partner, a guy named Willie Tomasello, who was identified in numerous reports of law enforcement as an associate of the Gambino and Genovese families, and it's quite clear that there was a long, deep relationship between Donald's father and the mafia.
Mm-hmm. Back to the point, post-World War II and that housing, it was interesting to read that Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, had to testify before a Senate committee on banking and currency because of a reported excess of profit for millions of dollars after Second World War. Tell us about that, because when he testified, he sounded much like Donald Trump sounds today.
He did. The FHA came to realize that some, not all, but some of the builders using its programs were gaming the system to make much larger profits than they were supposed to make. This was brought to the attention of President Eisenhower, who apparently went into a raging fit in the Oval Office over this, and pretty soon there were 100 investigators working on this. Donald's father was one of the witnesses in 1954 called before the banking committee, and he said, no, it's all a misunderstanding. You don't understand. I'm not a profiteer. I didn't take any of this money. It's all sitting in the bank account. And that's the kind of creative description of things that Donald does.
So just to be clear, he's saying because he hasn't removed any of the $4 million in his bank account, it's not that he's taken it.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And that's just, that's just nonsense. This was well covered at the time. And also the state of New York on several occasions, as well as the federal government later, pursued both Donald's father and Donald for racial discrimination in the 70s after the Fair Housing Act was passed in the wake of Martin Luther King's assassination. The government would send a black or Puerto Rican person or couple with their finances to rent an apartment. If they were turned away, a white person or couple with the exact same finances would then ask to see an apartment, and they were often told at Trump properties, we have several wonderful apartments. Let's just show you these. And for 2 years, Donald's properties and his father's properties were under federal supervision. They stayed with the supervision. They didn't discriminate. It ended. Right after it ended, the government sent out teams to test again, and guess what? They were turning away blacks and Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm. Back a little further, but before that, you describe how he attended the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, or says he does, but it sounds by the writing, you as an investigative reporter found a little bit of difficulty nailing down exactly what he did study there?
Well, Donald went there for 2 years. He says to everybody, I went to the super genius Wharton School, which is a top-notch finance school. In fact, he went to the undergraduate college, and his degree is in economics. He was not well known among his fellow students as a top student. He wasn't seen by a lot of people. The actress Candace Bergen told me that she went out on a date with him, which, as she put it, ended early. In contrast to that, you know, he often says, well, there's no evidence President Obama went to Harvard or to Columbia. President Obama is the first person listed in a footnote by Lawrence Tribe, the famous constitutional scholar at Harvard Law, and a number of the professors there have written and spoken about how he was one of the most sophisticated, brilliant students they had ever seen, and he was elected by his peers president of the Harvard Law Review. You look into Donald's record, you can't find much because Donald was off doing deals with his father often and wasn't around in class.
Mm-hmm. And you, Donald Trump also likes to talk about donations he makes to charities. You had trouble finding whether he had donated to his alma mater, University of Pennsylvania.
Well, there's no public record of any kind that he's ever given a dime there. Now, there is a Donald J. Trump Charitable Foundation, and I have all of its tax returns. Donald has made one contribution in the last 10 years. Most of the money in the foundation didn't come from him. It came from the McMahon family that own World Wrestling Federation, from the guy who makes his ties in China, from other people who do business with Donald. And essentially, these are a form of a legal kickback. But what's interesting about that, Ben, is that why doesn't Donald contribute? Well, there's very good evidence that Donald doesn't and hasn't for years paid income taxes. And of course, if you don't pay income taxes, a charitable gift has no value to you. There's no tax deduction value in it, which would be a reason Donald would encourage other people doing business with him to fund his charitable foundation.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps it's a good time to briefly go into why he has been able, tax code allows him to not pay income tax, and how we know this.
Yeah, well, and viewers should know that I'm currently writing an entirely new federal tax code. I'm a well-known authority on taxes. I teach tax law at Syracuse University College of Law and its graduate business school, although I'm not a lawyer. First of all, if you are a big full-time real estate professional, you can live tax-free because Congress has special rules for you. You can delay paying your taxes into the distant future, and effectively you get a zero-interest loan from the government equal to your taxes. Most people are denied this by Congress, but a narrow group of people, and Donald is one of them, qualify for this. We know from public documents that I have, and I have thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of Trump documents in my home. He paid no income taxes in 1978 and 1979, and he and I once had lunch and talked about this. I gave him some tax advice. He was a little nonplussed that a journalist knew the tax law. We know he didn't pay in 84, which I'll come back to, and we know he didn't pay in 92 and 94, and there are documents in the Casino Control Commission records in New Jersey that indicate it's unlikely he's paid income taxes since then. In 1984, we know that Donald paid no income taxes because he was audited by the state of New York and the city of New York. There's a city income tax in New York. And in one of those two, he then appealed the audits. He had claimed $600,000 of deductions for his Schedule C or sole proprietor business with no income. So surprise, surprise, he got audited. He couldn't document or justify these deductions, but he told his tax lawyer to appeal. Under oath, when his tax lawyer was shown the only copy of the tax return that could be found, nobody could ever find the original, he looked at it and said, you know, that's my signature, but I didn't prepare that document.
Mm.
That's pretty strong evidence of tax fraud.
Mm-hmm. So based on what you have done, the research here, there's good reason that Donald Trump does not want to release any income statements or tax forms.
And some people like me would be able to reverse engineer his tax returns, and we would know a lot about how much his buildings are really worth, what financing, if any, he is getting through Kazakhstan and oligarchs in Russia, where he has lots of dealings, what his actual income is. We could tell a great deal, just as years ago I took Hillary Clinton's returns and reverse engineered them and enraged her by showing that she and her husband paid more than twice as much income tax as the law required for several years, even though they spent $10,000 a year having their tax returns prepared.
Mm-hmm. And why did they do that?
Because they got bad tax advice. And the next year, they changed how they did their tax returns so the charity got all the money and the government got less. And the White House spokesman, when I was went to the White House press room for this, I rarely went there, maybe six times in my life, when I went, oh, really? He said, yes, and the White House wants to be on record that we did not take our tax advice from you and the New York Times. And everybody in the room erupted in laughter because they did exactly what was implicitly suggested in my news stories.
Mm-hmm. While we're on the financial topic here, Donald Trump maintains his worth is some $10 billion. What is it really based on your research?
Under oath, Donald was asked, how do you measure your net worth?
When?
This was in 2007 or 2009. The exact dates are in the book. There are 42 pages of endnotes where you can look everything up that I report. But he's asked under oath, how do you determine? Now, most of us would say, well, I own these assets and I owe these loans and the difference is my net worth. Donald says his net worth is based on his emotions. And that explains why within a period of days after announcing he was running in 2015, he said he was worth $8.7 billion, $10 billion, more than $11 billion. Back in 1990, before I revealed that his personal net worth statement showed he wasn't a billionaire, and a government document a few months later showed he had a negative net worth of about $295 million, Donald in the same day told people he was worth $3 billion or $5 billion. He just makes it up. Mm. He just makes it up.
If you just joined us, my guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston, a longtime reporter for The New York Times. He teaches now at Syracuse University College of Law. He's been following Donald Trump, reporting on him for some 30 years. His new book, The Making of Donald Trump, tells how this media mogul, reality star, TV star, turned to presidential candidate came to be, gives a lot of context to the utterances, the actions that we hear from Donald Trump. Let me ask you about the Vietnam period. Back to Donald Trump as a young man, he avoided military service during the Vietnam War. How?
Well, he got four student deferments, and then he got a doctor's letter saying that he had a bone spur. He was asked about a year ago, well, you know, which foot? And he said, I don't remember. You know, I've talked to doctors who take different views about whether he would or wouldn't remember, but in any event, he got a medical deferment and then he got a high draft number. So this was, you know, sort of routine draft avoidance that rich boys could do, during the war.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you point out something that I think a lot of people don't know, that he actually declared his candidacy for the presidency back in 2004, again in 2012. But you write that you knew those in 2004 and 2012 were not serious attempts. But you also write that you knew that 2016 was a serious
right.
attempt when most others thought it was a joke. How was that different? How did you know?
Well, in 2000, he ran in 2000 on this fringe Reform Party ticket, and he said, I'm going to be the first candidate to turn a profit off of my campaign. In 2012, Donald was really running for a new contract for his TV show, A Celebrity Apprentice. And you'll remember when he dropped out of the race, he said, in effect, much as the country needs me, my show needs me right now. This time around, Donald was in serious risk of having his show canceled. And to Donald, who assiduously plants items in the two New York tabloids, especially the New York Post, and reads them religiously, having the New York Daily News and Post covers say, NBC to Trump, you're fired, is just about the worst thing that could happen to him short of death. I said right off, Donald is serious this time. His challenge is that if he doesn't get the nomination, he needs to exit in a way that will show he has a bigger TV audience than has been realized and come up with a new TV show and he'll make more money. If he does get the nomination, and I said right off the bat he might get it, then his challenge is going to be how to run a campaign that could actually get him elected, because Donald doesn't know anything and a campaign will bring this out. as we've begun to see already.
Lacking of basic knowledge is something that you, well, not only your book, but there are plentiful examples of this. This is something that even the many in the Republican Party criticize him for. What are your one or two favorite examples of lacking basic knowledge that a president would need to know?
Well, one of the stories I recount is Donald was asked under oath about a basic business concept called net present value. That is the expected future cash from an investment minus the cash you have to spend to support the investment, and the balance of those two reduced to a dollar amount you would get today. Anyone who's gone to a first-rate business school, as Donald says he did, should know that the way a grammar school child knows 2 plus 2 equals 4. When Donald was asked this, he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, well, that net present value, you know, interest, net is a very interesting word, but present's the more important word, and I wouldn't do that. In other words, gibberish.
I want to play a little bit of audio from the recent Republican National Convention. One of the lines that really stuck out was reported on, I alone can solve the country's problem. Let's listen to just a few seconds of the audio from that.
Nobody knows the system better than me. Which is why I alone can fix it.
Okay. Does he really mean that? Does he believe that, do you think? Or is this just campaign rhetoric? I alone can do this.
No, Donald, that's how Donald thinks. Donald does not understand that the President of the United States is not a dictator. He doesn't understand the duties and limitations that are in Article 2 of our Constitution about the presidency. Donald is used to being in a business world where he's in complete control, and he says, do this or you get fired. And one way you know this is Donald has gone out of his way to pick a fight until a few days ago with Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. No legislation moves in Congress without the Speaker deciding to let it move. So nobody who wants wants to get changes in Congress picks a fight with the Speaker. You're not going to see Hillary Clinton pick a fight with Paul Ryan, because if he's Speaker, he can block every legislative agenda she has. She's going to want to compromise and work with him. So that's part of what tells you that Donald doesn't know anything.
He portrays himself, despite his background, his growing up, he portrays himself as a champion of the working class.
Right.
When you look back at how his empire, his media empire, his real estate empire has operated under his hand, how has he treated workers over the years?
Abominably. He's been repeatedly found to have engaged in discrimination against blacks, women, and Asians. When he had to tear down the Bonwit Teller department store in New York before he could build Trump Tower, he hired between 150 and 200 illegal immigrants from Poland who had no work papers. They had no papers to be in the country in most cases. He paid them $4 an hour, a few of them $5 an hour. They had no hard hats. They had no goggles. They had no face masks, even though they were working with asbestos. They were stripping live wires with their bare hands. They brought the building down, 12-story building in the middle of Manhattan, with sledgehammers. They slept on the work site. They didn't get paid. And at one point, they took Donald's overseer and showed him the edge of the high floor and said they'd hang him off the edge if they didn't get paid, in part because they were hungry. Donald was sued later over this, and he testified he had no idea this was going on, that this couldn't possibly have happened, et cetera. And a federal judge found his testimony was not credible, pointing out, among other things, that Donald had a window view from across the street, that he went to the site repeatedly, and the Polish workers were easy to identify. They were the only people on the work site who didn't have hard hats.
And yet, Donald Trump is portrayed as a populist, helping the worker class. Polls show that blue-collar workers support Donald Trump, white blue-collar workers. How do you explain that?
Well, you know, I've written a series of best-selling books about how government policies very few people knew about take from the many and give to the few, how your sales tax dollars build stores for Lowe's and Walmart and, in some cases, entire shopping centers, how there is one industry that's exempt from the corporate income tax, but you are forced by a regulation to pay at the grossed-up income tax. And there's thousands of these rules that, in my books, perfectly legal on taxes, free lunch on subsidies, and the fine print on restraint of trade I've explained. The people in the bottom half of this country's economy are living in economic terror. People in the bottom 90%, their average income in 2014 was essentially the same when you adjust for inflation as in 1967, the year I graduated from high school. And so people who, unless they've read my books, they look around and they say, I'm working harder and making less. I have almost no protections from being fired. If I get fired, there's a high chance I won't even be able to get, because of all these new laws, unemployment insurance. There's no welfare. There's no social support. They're terrified. And Donald comes along with a simple, easy-to-understand message. You know why you're in bad shape? Well, it's the Chinese, because they're smarter than our leaders. And it's the Mexicans who are coming across the border, the murderers and rapists. And it's the Muslims. And it's just describing the other and blaming it all on them. And to a lot of people who are not well-educated, this makes sense. Now, that's not all of Donald's support, but it does explain a lot of the white-collar workers who've been really badly damaged for the last 35 years by our economic rules set by Congress, trying to find somebody who will explain for them why things have turned so awful.
Mm-hmm. We have just about a minute before we go to break. Soon after Trump declared his candidacy last year in 2015, you wrote a piece that posed 21 questions you thought reporters should ask on the campaign trail. We have a minute or so. Can you share some of the questions that you thought should be asked of Trump, the candidate?
Well, among them were about his association with Joey Wechselbaum, a convicted felon and mob associate. Donald got his helicopters, both his personal one and his casino helicopters, from this guy. He turned out to be a major, major drug trafficker. Donald pleaded for mercy for this guy, whose case was in Ohio, but it was moved to New Jersey and came before Judge Marianne Trump Berry, Donald's sister. She removed herself from the case, but while the little fish in that cocaine ring got up to 20 years, this guy got 18 months and then moved into a multimillion dollar apartment in Trump Tower. You know, why would Donald go to bat for a cocaine trafficker? Why did he need him to be his friend? That's probably the most important question in the 21 questions.
Okay, we'll be back with more from Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston live from New York City today. And his latest book, he's been following Donald Trump for decades with his reporting, The Making of Donald Trump. He's met with Donald Trump several times. Donald Trump has even called him. We'll ask about that when we come back. The Making of Donald Trump. Join us with your questions about the life and work of Donald Trump, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow, of course, Politics Wednesday. A number of the things we'll look at tomorrow, Donald Trump's economic plan, which was announced yesterday. Also, a couple of the parents of the Benghazi victims file a wrongful death lawsuit against Hillary Clinton. Talk about the political implications of that tomorrow on the program. Today, Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston with us, longtime reporter for the New York Times. He now teaches at Syracuse University College of Law. His new book, The Making of Donald Trump. It's based on some 30 years of reporting on Donald Trump, his rise in real estate and also in reality TV, on into his presidential bids. And if you'd like to join our conversation, what questions do you have about how Donald Trump became the man and the presidential nominee he is today? 1-866-780-9100. If you'd like to email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to Zach in Moline, Illinois, where Zach is listening. Hi, Zach. What's your question?
Hi there. I was just curious as to, aside from the massive amount of free publicity he's been getting from this presidential campaign, why is Donald Trump running if he appears to not have any interest in actually governing?
Excellent question, Zach. Can you answer that for us, David?
That's a very good question that Zach asked. Donald, in his own mind, has an incredibly inflated view of himself. I've called him a world-class narcissist. And Donald believes that he is superior. One of his sons said, "My father and I believe in the horse race theory of genetics. You breed with the right woman, and then your children are inherently superior, whether the regardless of things like their education." And Donald sees a world in which, you know, either you recognize his greatness, that he is the modern Midas and the great Don Juan of our age, or he has a word for you, loser. This has to do with his ego. And everybody who runs for president has a big ego. What makes Donald distinct is he doesn't have any policy or knowledge to go with the ego.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that he is undoubtedly masterful in, and you write about this in your book, David, is that he studies the conventions of journalism, and you say he displays more genius at exploiting them to his advantage than anyone else you've ever known.
Absolutely. Donald understands that a couple of things, that tabloid reporters and most TV reporters need to get a story, a good story that someone will follow, and people watch Donald just like they watch a car wreck. He also understands that most journalists will accurately quote what you say, even if they don't really understand what's going underneath the surface. When he runs into someone like me or Wayne Barrett, who are the two reporters who most closely examined him, then he runs into trouble because we do know how things work. We do have a deep knowledge of how government functions and legal theory and economic theory, and so he tries to avoid people like us. And you'll notice that Donald has banned a whole long list of news organizations from covering his rallies, but never TV, just places like the Washington Post and the Daily Beast, where I write a column once a week, that have been tough on him.
Mm-hmm. So how does, when Trump is cornered, and you talk about some of this in your book, when he's cornered with an uncomfortable question from a journalist who won't just give it a pass, what does he generally do?
He tries to buffalo his way out of it. Lester Holt, recently of the NBC Nightly News host, sat down with him, and he asked him about his statement that Hillary Clinton slept through Benghazi. And he pointed out it was 3:30 in the afternoon, and she was on the phone working this. And Trump then tried to say, well, I didn't really mean she was sleeping at night, and another one, buffalo his way out of the fact that he didn't know. And Donald's done this his whole career. One of the first times I met Donald, and we've talked many times, because his competitors and some of his own employees had told me he didn't understand anything about the casino business, I deliberately said a false thing. Well, Donald immediately incorporated into his answer and fed it back to me, just the way psychics do, and there's after, you know, that are advertised on TV, and con artists do. And I fed him a couple of other false statements, and he continued down that road. And that's what led me to realize that he wasn't just the P.T. Barnum of our age. He's at heart a con artist.
Mm-hmm. Why does he still have contact with you? You said, how many times would you say you've met or spoken with him?
Oh, dozens.
Uh-huh.
Almost all of them back in 88 to 92.
Considering the portrait you've given of his life and work now, why does he continue to have contact with you, some might ask?
Well, in April, I was working on a piece for Politico about all of Donald's connections with con artists, swindlers, drug traffickers, and other Russian mobsters and other people like this. And I had sent Donald a list of questions to see if he wanted to comment on what they were. And he called me at home. He has my home number. And it was a standard Donald Trump call. Hail fellow, well met. Soliciting a little information, indicating he's not interested in any of the substance. Romance. You know, I like a lot of the things you've written about me, Dave. Menace. But if I don't like what you write, I'm going to sue you. I point out to Donald that he is a public figure, so he would have to show that I deliberately, knowingly lied about him. And he said, I know I'm a public figure. I'll sue you anyway. You know, I've been covering politicians since 1966. I've never had anybody from candidate for president down to school board tell me, you better write what I like or I'm going to sue you.
But this
that's
has worked.
Not how
this
we
has,
do things in America.
This has worked for Trump, though, in the past.
He has very successfully intimidated news organizations. And, in fact, the piece for Politico, I have written pieces accusing people of I've exposed foreign agents in the U.S. I've gotten the worldwide president of Ernst & Young fired, gotten lots of laws passed, people sent to prison, many of them exposed domestic spies. I have never in almost 50 years had a piece as lawyered as Politico did, and it's very clear it's because they were terrified he would sue them. And they know he can't win, but he could cost them an enormous amount of money in legal fees fighting him. And Donald knows this, and so he threatens news organizations, sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly, so that they don't do what I'm doing, which is asking the tough questions and telling people the things Donald does not want you to know.
Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston with us live from New York City this hour. His new book, The Making of Donald Trump, 1-866-780-9100, if you'd like to join us with a question about what made Donald Trump into the man he is today. I want to ask you about an aspect of Donald Trump. I'm not sure if this is covered in your book too much. I want to listen to a series of campaign excerpts from several Donald Trump events where he, I guess he either threatens violence or incites violence or says, oh, I'm going to cover your legal fees if you do do something to the person who is protesting against me. Let's listen to that. And I want to ask you how this fits into his life going back seven decades. Let's listen to Donald Trump recently in many different events.
We're not allowed to punch back anymore. I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. I'd have to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Yeah, get him out. Try not to hurt him. If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about it.
Do whatever you have to do to him. I don't care. And you know what? I think I'm totally within my rights to say that.
Knock the crap out of him, would you? Seriously.
I was going to hit a number of those speakers so hard, their heads would spin. They'd never recover.
Just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees. I promise.
Okay, a few words from Donald Trump, obviously from various campaign speeches. Has this sort of talk been part of Donald Trump's persona his entire career, David K. Johnston?
Oh, yeah. Donald's been a bully his whole life. There are people in Queens who tell stories of him throwing rocks at little children in their playpens when he was a boy. In one of his books, he said he slugged his second-grade teacher because he didn't think the teacher knew what he was doing. I'm not sure that story's true. Donald's father sent him off to a military academy when he was 12 or 13 because he was such a troublemaker. And he has a long history of doing this. And he associates with people who are violent criminals, violent convicted felons. So, yes, this is just part of a pattern. And, you know, Plato warned us a long time ago that if you want to see a tyrant, notice when they start surrounding themselves with bodyguards. And Donald always has had bodyguards around him.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump says he's a Christian. He's courted the Christian evangelical vote also here in Iowa, one of about a dozen swing states for the upcoming election. What does his life overall say about his Christian beliefs, his attitudes and actions?
This is a very important issue. Donald has beguiled a number of pastors with flattery. Donald, in 16 pages in a chapter in one of his books, in profanity-laced speeches, in interviews, has utterly rejected the message of Jesus Christ. The Sermon on the Mount, especially Matthew 5, 39 to 45, about turn the other cheek. Donald's personal motto is get revenge. He wrote in one of his books about a woman who he asked to do a favor, and she turned him down because she thought it was unethical. Donald said that that turned her into his enemy. She had attacked him because she wouldn't do the favor. And he said, I fired her. And then she started a business and it failed. And I was so happy to see her fail. And her husband left her. And that made me even happier. And then she lost her house. And this is just so wonderful. And if anybody ever does anything to you that isn't disloyal, hit them 15 times over. Destroy that person. Now, that is so antithetical to the message of Christianity. I can only assume that the pastors who are embracing Donald Trump don't know that he said these things. And I hope people listening direct their pastors to my book and ask them to read it and then come to their own judgments about Donald's own words. Donald denigrates the communion. He refers to, oh, when I get my little wine and my little cracker. He says no one reads the Bible more than Donald Trump, but he's never been able to cite a passage from the Bible. And the one time he tried, he got it wrong. That's in the book with his exact words. And as I mentioned earlier, Ben, there are 42 pages of endnotes so that you can check everything I report, see where it came from. It's all in the public record. that Donald has said or done.
Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston with us this hour. His new book, The Making of Donald Trump. Of course, Trump University, much in the news over the last few months. Donald Trump at some stage of facing fraud charges for Trump University. I'd like to have you outline his connection with Trump University. This is a very interesting story that you tell in your book. But first of all, some key wording from Donald Trump himself. Let's listen to some audio from a promotional video of Trump University. This from, I believe, 2005.
We're going to have professors and adjunct professors that are absolutely terrific, terrific people, terrific brains, successful. We are going to have the best of the best. And honestly, if you don't learn from them, if you don't learn from me, if you don't learn from the people that we're going to be putting forward, and these are all people that are hand-picked by me, then you're just not going to make it in terms of the world of success. I think the biggest step towards success is going to be sign up at Trump University. We're going to teach you about business. We're going to teach you better than the business schools are going to teach you.
Okay, professors in business, also handpicked by Trump. This is all things that I guess he's denying now.
That's right. Under oath, when Donald was asked about this, he was read off the names of everyone who was the quote-unquote faculty. He didn't know any of them. He was offered pictures, videos, didn't know any of them. He admitted he didn't pick anybody. So who were these people? Well, one of them was a manager of a fast food joint. A couple of them were in personal bankruptcy. A lot of them were veterans of boiler rooms, you know, high-pressure sales tactics operators. None of them had experience in real estate. Donald said you promised people they would meet him. What you got was a picture of you with a cardboard cutout of Donald.
And for the price tag of what?
Well, that's the next thing I was going to get to. You paid $1,500 to go to the first three-day seminar, which Texas investigators from the state attorney general's office went to 57 of these and said they were all the same. The instructors would stand over people and instruct them in how to call their banks and borrow all the money they could, get new credit lines, take out new credit cards, so they could pay $35,000 for the full package. And many of these people, once they borrowed enough money to get the full package, had no capacity to borrow anymore. So how would you get into real estate if you've exhausted your credit paying Donald Trump? They also said that the information given was worthless. And I point out in the book that Donald had promised special access to lenders. Well, what you got was a list of banks to call that I got for free off the internet from a magazine called The Scotsman's Guide, which is where Trump University got it. It's a fraud top to bottom. And here's a really disturbing part. The Texas Attorney General rejected his staff's advice. They said not only should we pursue Trump and sue him personally, but his legal defenses won't work, and they laid out the legal reasons why, and they're in my book. The Florida Attorney General was thinking about and publicly said she was investigating whether to go after Donald for this, and then the Donald J. Trump Charitable Foundation made a gift to her campaign. First of all, it's illegal for a foundation to make a gift to a campaign, and yet her campaign spokesperson said, we're perfectly comfortable with the gift we received from the Donald J. Trump Charitable Foundation. And there were all sorts of people in Florida who felt cheated, who complained. The Attorney General said, we only have one complaint. It turns out there were tons of complaints. But she got the contribution, and she dropped the investigation of him.
Mm. We have, unfortunately, just 5 minutes left, yep. David K. Johnston. But so many things that we could get to. I wanted to have you comment on one of the most bizarre aspects of Donald Trump's practices, his use of fake identities. John Barron, one of his identities, John Miller, another one. Tell us briefly when they were born, how he's used them. They are him.
Donald planted news stories back before he was well-known on television by calling up newspaper reporters, including the New York Times, on a front-page story he took them, saying he was John Barron, he was a spokesman for Donald Trump. In an interview with People magazine, he boasted about Kim Basinger and Madonna and Carla Bruni, later the First Lady of France, were beating on his bedroom door to have sex with him. And John Barron is Donald Trump. And he admitted this back in 1991 when People magazine nailed him, yet he called the Today Show a few weeks ago when the Washington Post got a hold of a tape that almost certainly came from the Trump campaign and said, that's not me. That, just listen to this. It doesn't even sound like me.
Even though he had admitted it earlier.
That's right. And it sounds exactly like him. And what he was really trying to do was muddy the waters. But I think the question people should think about here is, this is a man in his mid-40s who is trying to plant news stories that these famous women, you know, are all hot for him when he doesn't even know them. What does that tell you about someone's character? I mean, if a 13-year-old boy does that, it's sort of like, yeah, stupid kid. But it's a middle-aged man.
Well, this is a man 70 years old.
Now 70, but when he did the original stuff, he was in his mid-40s.
I see. Okay. So, David, what do you hope readers will take away from this book?
Well, I want people to know who they're voting for. Donald Trump has packaged himself to tell you what he wants you to know. The making of Donald Trump is essentially everything Donald wants you to not know. Now, if you read my book and you say, I still want to vote for the guy, or I can't stand Hillary Clinton, I'm going to think, go right ahead and do so. And I encourage people to read the serious books about Hillary Clinton. There's a bunch of trash books about her. Read the serious books about her.
Can you name a couple?
As well. No, I'm sorry.
Okay, I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
I'm so focused on what I'm doing.
Yes, I understand.
But there are some good books about her that have been done, particularly one that she hates about her. There are two books by an eminent historian about her marriage to Bill and their relationship and how it shaped their lives. And she hates those books, but they're very serious, good books. But, you know, people should know that this man is he doesn't know anything. He is closely associated with lots of criminals. That his business practices, as measured by Fortune magazine, and his court record are abominable, that he has a long history of promoting violence against people. And if that's who you think should be the president of the United States, if that's the guy who you want to have his finger on the nuclear button, then, you know, vote for him. But you should know who he is. And most especially, I hope that Christians, if their pastors are supporting Donald Trump, ask their pastors, do you know what this man has actually said, denigrating communion, rejecting the message of Jesus Christ, and yet he calls himself a Christian? Has he beguiled you with flattery? Is he a deceiver?
Mm-hmm. Has Donald Trump reacted to this book?
Not yet.
Do you expect he will?
Well, if Donald may sue me, and if he does, he does. You know, I'm a guy who's personally hunted down a murderer, run into a burning building. I mean, maybe I have a screw loose and I'm not afraid of things. If he's elected president, I have every expectation that he will find some way to use the federal government to make my life miserable. But do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. What does this say in the larger picture, Donald Trump's popularity, his nomination, about the state of American society and our politics currently? We have just about a minute left.
We have very weak parties, and we are seeing the rise of personality politics, and this is not good for the country. The founders of this country believed in reason and rationality, and they were creatures of the growing out of the Enlightenment, and they would be appalled at what we are seeing today. We've had corrupt presidents, we've had dumb presidents, but we've never had a president with a lifelong history of embracing criminals, cheating people out of their money, running cons. That's a whole new and very disturbing development if we want our democracy to endure.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, in 20 or 30 seconds, any predictions for the coming weeks, months, up until the election?
I think it's going to be a very interesting election. Donald is not going to drop out, I don't think, and it'll be interesting to see whether he's willing to debate, and I certainly hope the networks have me on because I have three questions for Donald and three for Hillary that I think would have a profound effect on the election. Easy questions for him, tough ones for her.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much. Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnson, his new book, The Making of Donald Trump. It's been a great hour to spend with you. Thank you for joining us, David.
Ben, thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Help from Graham Bly today. Tomorrow, Politics Day. We'll chew over some of the latest politics, including a look at Donald Trump's economic plan and that wrongful death suit filed against Hillary Clinton. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer.